TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Fast Food World, TUC Personal Archive, 2 of 2. Eric Schlosser, Vanda Nashiva, Michael Pollan, Carlo Petrini, and Wendell Berry. Welcome back for the second half of an extraordinary event. In November 2003, I recorded a panel discussion about the corporate control of industrial agriculture and the impact of fossil fuels. What role have corporations and international so-called free trade played in the last 30 years in moving farmers off their land? And how have fossil fuel-based chemicals poisoned not only the food we eat, but also soil and water where food is grown? Fast Food World was organized by Orville Schell, Dean of UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism and Professor of Journalism, Michael Pollan. They had invited an international panel. The first speaker today will be Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, followed by Vandana Shiva from India, activist and author of Monocultures of the Mind and Biopiracy. Also present and participating in the discussion, whether it is even still possible to feed the huge world population with healthy food, are Wendell Berry from Kentucky, farmer and poet, and Carlo Petrini from Italy, founder of Slow Food International. Here is Eric Schlosser, moving us back in time and history.
It's true that white men came to this country looking for spices. And it's also true that there would not be a United States if there wasn't a trade dispute over dumping. And it was the same British East India Company that was dumping tea at a very low price onto the American market. And it really angered the tea distributors on the East Coast. And that was really the beginning of the United States. So globalization, and particularly the global trade in agricultural goods, is as old as mankind. But the question is, what are the terms of that trade? And who is benefiting from it? Now, when there was a British Empire, the British Empire benefited profoundly from it. When they followed a mercantilist policy, they used their colonies as sources of raw material that they would exploit. But once it was in their interest, and once they had a very strong manufacturing base, they turned to, quote, free trade, unquote, because it was in their interest. Again and again, you see the terms of world trade being dictated by the dominant world power. The only free trade there is right now, I would argue, is that you are free to give large sums of money to the Republican Party, and in return, you will be able to trade. So when you're talking about this, this global trade in agriculture, or you're talking about the world economic system and how it's been transformed in the last 20 years, what you're talking about is a centralization of corporate power and a growth in corporate power. And I don't come to this in a narrowly anti-corporate way, but I am opposed to the unbridled corporate power that we now see in the world. And it is of enormous importance when it comes to food. It may just be irritating when it comes to music, but when it comes to food, it has profound importance because there is no other industry without food. Food is the bedrock of our civilization. And as Wendell has written about for years, it is the determinant of the physical landscape and the cultural landscape. And I think that we have to look at the product that is being pushed onto the world as a form of pollution. It is a form of pollution that is polluting not just the landscape, through these gigantic factory farms, through genetically modified organisms that we have no idea what the consequences are going to be for generations. But it's also a pollution of our culture and of our society, this centralized, uniform, corporate culture that I would argue is the antithesis of freedom. It's the antithesis of anything that Adam Smith ever envisaged. And it's much closer to corporate socialism. And when you look at where those subsidies are going, and not just the farm subsidies going to agribusiness, but the enormous subsidies that are given to the oil companies, we will fight wars for them. We will send our young to die for them. This is a cost too high to pay. So I would argue that this cheap food is much, much too expensive for our culture. Now, I wrote about McDonald's. McDonald's, a few years ago, had a slogan that I found telling and chilling. And their slogan was, "One taste worldwide." Now, all you need to do is draw a little mustache on Ronald, and you get a sense of what that ideology ultimately means. We have dealt for the last 100 years with one ideology after another that's trying to impose uniformity and conformity. And what everyone on this panel is arguing for is the antithesis, which is a respect for diversity, a respect for regional identity.
That was Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, on a panel on fast food at UC Berkeley. The moderator of the panel was the author and former rancher Orville Schell, dean of the Department of Journalism at UC Berkeley. Now the conversation begins. The Kentucky poet and farmer Wendell Berry engages Vandana Shiva.
I want to ask Vandana, how were the standards of quality enforced in the traditional old communities of India?
I remember my father, who is no more, eating a meal and saying, "No, I can't eat the curry today. The tomatoes have pesticide." Yeah. And I think the best standards of quality were maintained by recognizing that the body is the best measure of quality. I think this is what Carla was meaning about not there being no interpreter. The problem is industrialization of food has meant industrialization of our bodies, and therefore a desensitization to quality. I look at it in two ways. The first is all living cultures and all human societies have recognized quality as the best measure of knowing what's in the world. In India, we talk about 5 knowledge systems, you know, the knowing through the ear, the knowing through the smell, the knowing through the taste. Those are all knowings. But the Cartesian Revolution got rid of quality as being measurable, even though we had ways of measuring quality. And primary qualities were reduced to the totally constructed ones. Yeah, the size of this table, the weight, the size of this. And then we could keep increasing the size and saying we are increasing quantity. But we've defined quantity as the first quality and the only quality, and everything else was unreliable quality. I was doing a workshop in a village on agriculture, organic farming, GMOs, etc. And a little girl in a village school said, "Why are they so crazy? They want to harvest all of the mangoes in one season as one mango. That doesn't give us more mangoes." She could see it, that one bigger mango is not more mangoes. So I really feel the issue is not so much quality versus quantity, but quantity embedded in a matrix of quality, which gives us the real living relationship with the land, with the food. Now, the Mayan farms in Oaxaca are growing 20 tons of food, except that the food is jackfruit and banana and beans, etc., and 2 tons of corn. So the 2 tons of corn is made to look like less than the 4 tons of corn. But I can have a bet if you do a trace analysis of micronutrients, those 2 tons of corn, which have better quality and better taste, also have more nutrients. Recently, when we were together in Naples for the Slow Food Congress, I did mention that the trap of quantity alone without quality is getting us into the obesity trap.
So here's a question addressed to Michael Pollan, but I think it is all panelists might want to take a crack at it. Do you think that we have changed the carrying capacity of the Earth through fossil fuels to the extent that we could not support the current population with organic agriculture free of synthetic fertilizers?
That is a very hard and scary question. When I've done research on nitrogen fertilizer, which in a way is the key 20th century invention driving the whole industrialization of food, is the fact that we learned how to turn fossil fuel into food for our plants. I learned that there are 2 billion people on this planet whose very substance is nitrogen that came from those fertilizers. So whether we can undo that is a real question. That is the limiting factor in so much agriculture and therefore in so much population, is this limitation on the nitrogen in our soil. And we've exceeded that artificially. Now there is a margin, Wes Jackson says there's a kind of margin for error because we're feeding so much food to animals. And I think if we truly went to organic and we could eliminate all the fertility we're giving to our cattle, it might help. But I don't think it's at all clear that going to a completely organic agriculture as we now know it could support a population of 8 billion.
Anyone else have a thought on that? Yeah, Wendell?
Well, in the first thing to say in reply to that question, I think, is that we don't know right now. We're probably going to find out. But to talk about this dependence on industrial agriculture that we now have, once we understand it, to propose that we've become dependent on a form of agriculture that finally is going to starve everybody. We couldn't do it in this country very fast because we don't have the people to do it, and we don't have the knowledge, we don't have the skill, we don't have the local cultures that can sustain this kind of work. We had those cultures half a century ago, 40 years ago. This would have been a much more thinkable thing than it is now. But you can't simply pull the farmers you need out of the labor pool as you would for factory work or other industrial work. To have good farming, you have to know have people who know how to do it. And we just don't have them. And we're not saving the ones we have.
That was Wendell Berry. Here is Vandana Shiva.
I don't know the farms in Iowa. Never been there, never seen them. But I have studied the Green Revolution in India, which is the introduction of fossil fuel inputs, whether as nitrogenous fertilizers or mechanization. And in fact, that's what started me off on spending my time and life on food issues, because at the end of studying the violence in Punjab in the 80s, 84, 85, it became very clear that we hadn't produced more food on the land in Punjab. We had produced more rice and wheat. But we had produced more rice and wheat by getting rid of all the oil seeds, all the pulses, all the greens that were also part of food, but they were never taken into account in the food basket. So I would say the fact that the calculations have always been done with respect to the monocultures of 5 globally traded commodities and then generating the artificial surpluses in those commodities does not mean more food is being grown per unit resource use. I believe less food is being grown per unit resource use, and the units of resource use are land, biodiversity, and water. We're actually using 10 times more water to grow the same amount of food. So we are mining the planet for water, just to dissolve those extra chemicals. The plants don't need that excess water. The chemicals need it. And I also know beyond a point, you cannot keep pumping synthetic fertilizers into the soil and have the plant take it up, because what helps the plant take up nutrients is the living organisms in the soil. So chemicals have no direct relationships with the plants. And the fact that we extrapolate very conveniently to say, you know, this much more addition of nutrients. In Punjab, the productivity and yield is declining totally, because now the soils are absolutely saturated with synthetic fertilizers, which have killed the original creators of fertility. So I would basically say we need to move from monoculture calculations to biodiversity calculations. And I think in terms of biodiversity, ecological farms using biodiversity, not just monoculture organic farms, I think those will stay impoverished. But biodiverse farms using land, water, and biodiversity efficiently, and having biodiversity not just as an input, but as an output, that output is much higher than any industrial farm can produce. And that, I think, is a biological fact.
That was Vandana Shiva, Indian physicist, seed collector, feminist, and author of Monoculture of the Mind. She spoke on a panel on fast food that included Wendell Berry, Eric Schlosser, Michael Pollan, and Carlo Petrini. They were recorded at UC Berkeley just before Thanksgiving 2003. Here is the discussion of solutions. Michael Pollan responds to the question, is awareness growing that there is something fundamentally wrong with our food system?
I do think that there is a revolt underway. One of the things that has struck me as most hopeful since I've been writing about food is just how much power the consumer has, and that the consumer has driven a lot of positive change already. I mean, the growth of the organic agriculture movement in the face of opposition from the government, opposition from corporations. I think that food is one area where the right decision is often, as Carlos pointed out, the most pleasurable decision. And there's great power in that. I think when you can reunite pleasure and politics.
Here is Eric Schlosser.
Once people are aware of not only what they're eating, but what they're feeding to their kids, their behavior changes. And again, I get back to the issue of cost and pollution. In talking about fast food, this cheap food is a food that's imposing enormous external costs on society. And it's a struggle not just to make people aware of that, but also to take these external costs and put them back on the companies that are inflicting it elsewhere. So just something like the obesity epidemic that we have among children in the United States. I mean, there's a growing recognition that this is connected to what they're eating and how it's being marketed to them. Time magazine a couple of weeks ago had an incredible statistic. It came from a survey by Gerber Foods of what toddlers eat. And it found that 21% of American toddlers eat French fries every day. Now, the obesity epidemic is, and those are children aged 19 months to 23 months, every day. And so I think the change is going to come not only because people become aware, but the cost of this obesity epidemic and the cost of so many unwell children is going to be astronomical.
That was Eric Schlosser. Now the moderator, Orwell Schell, asks the next question. Vandana Shiva answers.
Here's somebody in the audience who asks, organic food is great in concept, but how do we get good, healthy food to poor people? How do we make this food affordable to them?
I think the first place to start is to move the subsidies, and I believe those subsidies have a legitimate place to be, to move them from being used to market GM foods, whether it's for third world food aid, or it is in the larger distribution chain in domestic systems, to turn that food aid into supporting high quality organic food, which would both help the farms economically, and it would make sure quality food reaches people. The point is, I think what's very often forgotten is ecological is the only viable system. It's been rendered unviable by a very fake system, which can't stand on its feet without huge subsidy structures. The industrial food system would collapse the day the $400 billion subsidies behind it is withdrawn. That system would just collapse. So it is necessary to direct public support to make sure high-quality food, locally grown in neighborhood systems, becomes available through the public money that's anyway going to keep a bad, unhealthy system to create obesity. So we need to finance health rather than obesity through public money.
I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, you know, if you go to McDonald's today, you can get a salad now for something like $4.99. And for the same amount of money, you can get 5 hamburgers. We're subsidizing the hamburger, the cheap, fossil fuel-driven meat, corn-fed meat. And we're not subsidizing the lettuce. And that's a big part of the problem, that we're subsidizing the wrong things. There's something that happens in this country every 5 years. We have this thing no one pays attention to, nobody in a room like this, nobody in Berkeley pays much attention to, and that is the Farm Bill, the inaptly named Farm Bill. There is a set of rules in this country that creates the food system we have, that subsidizes the cheap food, the fast food nation, that gives us our obesity crisis, that gives us the enmity of all these small farmers around the world who we're dumping produce on. Foreign policy in this country runs roughshod over public health concerns, over foreign policy goals. And the reason for that is we think it's a parochial issue. It's a farm state issue. And those of us who live in cities really don't think it's that we have a dog in this fight. We do. If it were called the Food Bill, which is what it should be called, we would all pay attention. We would all lean on our congressmen. And we could have a very different food system if we took the trouble to pay attention.
Wendell, in our efforts at home, there's been some attention given to making vouchers or food stamps viable on the farmers' markets, viable currency. Bill McKibben has an article on local economy, and he tells about a cafe owner in Barrie, Vermont, who is drawing his raw materials, so to speak, from a 60-mile radius around his restaurant and selling his food at prices that are comparable to other hamburger joints.
That was Wendell Berry. He is Carlo Petrini, president of the Slow Food Movement in Italy.
Mangiamo di meno.
Let's eat less.
Mangiamo meglio.
And let's eat better.
E allora la questione del prezzo non è una grande questione.
So the whole issue of prices is not really that big an issue.
Non bisogna esagerare.
You don't need to exaggerate.
Ma non bisogna neanche far la demagogia sul prezzo del cibo.
But we cannot be demagogues with regards to the price of food.
Nella storia dell'umanità si è mai speso così poco per mangiare.
In the whole history of humanity, we have never spent as little as we do right now for to eat well.
Noi in Italia, una famiglia italiana spende il 14% del reddito.
An Italian family in Italy spends 14% of their income.
Nel 1950 spendeva il 50% del reddito.
In 1950, they spent 50% of their income.
Allora, bisogna finirla con questa leggenda metropolitana che il cibo è caro.
So let's end this this metropolitan and urban legend that food is expensive. Come on.
Mangiate di meno.
Eat less.
Perfetto.
Perfect.
E mangiate bene.
But eat well.
Perché quando io mangio una fetta di prosciutto.
Because when I eat a slice of prosciutto.
Questo prosciutto dopo pochi minuti è Carlo Petrini.
Because after a few minutes this prosciutto becomes Carlo Petrini.
Fate attenzione, perché le mutande di Armani.
Because Armani's underwear.
Sono sempre fuori Carlo Petrini.
You know, they're always outside Carlo Petrini.
E non è più giusto pagare più care le mutande che il prosciutto.
And it is not fair that you have to pay more for pants than for prosciutto.
That was Carlo Petrini. He is the moderator, Orville Schell.
It'd be interesting for each of the panelists to maybe tell you some very quick thoughts about what one step, at least, they think might be possible to take, given the nature of the critique that we've heard this evening. Let's start with you, Eric.
Open your eyes and then act on what you see. And different people are going to choose different actions. But again, I ended my talk with something very concrete and immediate, and I would say, boycott Tyson. And you can do that guilt-free.
Well, I'll just add three to that one. It's a boycott Monsanto. And make the Cargills and the Conagras pay the full price of the trade from which they are making super profits, because they are leaving it all as an externality in terms of ruined soils, wiped out ecosystems, dispossessed farmers, and bad health for everyone. And given what I know from your book, Eric, about high fructose corn syrup, I think we need to add Philip Morris to the list. But I would just add one other thing. You know, I took a break from physics as a scientist to start looking at what was going on in agriculture. I have been an ecological activist as long as I can remember. But the fact that I have spent just so much time working in agriculture was, as a scientist, I could not believe how many lies had been told to us about the food system, about basic things like productivity, about basic stuff about who feeds whom. At a time when still 70% of the world is fed by smallholders and women, we are made to believe it's the Cargills we depend on.
That was Vandana Shiva, Indian physicist and seed collector, activist and author of Monocultures of the Mind and Biopiracy. Thanks to the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism and professor and author Michael Pollan for permission to record this extraordinary event entitled Fast Food World. It took place on November 24, 2003. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.